Okay, I happen to have Sukkah 5, 7, and 8 here, which says, at three periods of the year, all the watches, which is going to be the Mishmarot, it's literally the word that's used here, shared equally in the prescribed offerings of the festivals and the division of the showbread. On the festival weeks, they used to say to each other, here is unleavened bread, and it goes on. But you're able to see where it has discussed this. Okay, now, in the Second Temple period, and this was not until the Second Temple period, the priestly divisions let me see if I can set this up here. I think you'll be able to see it. I think most of you are familiar with it also. In the slaughterhouse area, it sounds good on tape, huh? Rattling of paper right in front of the microphone. Right north of the altar is the slaughterhouse area. And there are 24 rings that were set into the pavement. On each ring, there is a name of one of the divisions, one of the Mishmarot. And these are rotated each week. And so someone that is coming in through the Nicanor gate, the ring that he would approach first, which would be the north, let's see, this would be the southeastern ring, would have the name of the Mishmar that is on duty. And so you would immediately be able to even figure out the calendar by the rotation of the Mishmarot, of who was on duty and so forth. Now, there was no such thing for the Mishmarot of the Leva'im, only for the Kohanim. Also, each course of the Kohanim had a compartment in the chamber of the vestments to where a closet that they kept all the holy garments in, and these would be rotated by them. These would be their clothes were kept there for when they were on duty in the temple. They did not wear these outside the temple at all. When they returned back to their homes, wherever their homes were, they didn't take their priestly garments with them. They dressed like anyone else. However, the Kohanim did wear certain colors, but they weren't sacred garments.
One more question.
Certainly.
With all of the meeting at one time during the festival, if all the Mishmarot men were on duty.
Yes.
The one that was supposed to have it for that festival, the Mishmarot that had it for that festival, what was their duties? Were they totally ignored in this group process?
Okay. The one that was to have it for that week, okay, it was pushed back a week. They would fulfill their weekly service the following week. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So there would be two on duty that week then?
No. Okay, if let's start at the first week of Nisan. So your first course is going to be in service. The second week of Nisan, the second course will be on duty. The third week, all the courses are on duty, so nobody has special place. So the third course's week, appointed time for service, is actually the fourth week of the year. Do you follow me?
I'm not sure that I follow you on that.
It's okay if you disagree with me too. That's fine too. But that's my understanding, is that you served 1 week by course, second week. But when a festival came, they all came together They all served, and then the week following, they just picked it up back with the order of who was next. I'm not sure if that is in Sukkah 5. Another reference where they talk about this rotation is in Midot 3:5. But I don't have Kodeshin here. I thought that I did, but I don't see it. And that's where Midot is. Now, I already mentioned about that the... by the way, in Midot 3:5 is where it talks about the rings. And it also is in Midot 3:5, or in Tamid 5:3 is where it talks about their closets, where their garments were kept, the 24 closets where the garments were kept. There's an interesting story that one of these, the closets was permanently closed. And one of the rings, they kind of cemented in. This was the course of Bilga. And it was permanently blocked up. Its ring immovable, which was a sign of disgrace because one of its members had once acted shamefully, which, by the way, is found in the Babylonian Talmud where it discusses this, Sukkah 56b. Okay, now, this is important. What I'm going to tell you at this point. The weekly mishmarot of both the Kohanim and the Leva'im were broken up into between 4 and 9 subdivisions. Now these were called the Batei, B-A-T-T-E-I, Avot, A-V-O-T. Houses of the Fathers. If you'll remember, I told you to 1 Chronicles and chapter 35. Excuse me, 2 Chronicles and chapter 35. Where we see in verse 9 where the chiefs of the Levites I want one more before this. Yeah, here we go. In verse 12, then they removed the burnt offerings that they might give them to the divisions of the fathers' houses of the lay people to offer to the Lord, as is written in the book of Moshe, and they did so with the cattle. That's where you're seeing it of the lay people, the Ma'amad, but it's talking about the Batei Avot there, the houses of the fathers. Okay, let me give you this. If there were fewer than 7, talking about the Kohanim and the Leva'im, if there were fewer than 7, some would officiate twice during the week. If, on the other hand, there were more than 7, then on some days, 2 of them would serve together. Now, I don't know on the Leva'im at this time, but I have found out on the Kohanim how that they did this in the morning service. And by the way, this is found in the tractate Tamid. And it's in the first couple chapters. I've been working on this the last few days, of the daily services in the temple. And at the Beit HaMoked, which is the house of the hearth, the chamber of the hearth, where the Kohanim slept. And I don't know where the Leva'im slept. But the Kohanim slept in the Beit HaMoked. And early in the morning, before the crier of the temple gave his call, the threefold call to that deals with what we're talking about, for the Kohanim to go to their places, the Leva'im to go to their places, and the Ma'amad to go to their places. Before this, the superintendent, one of the superintendents of the temple, comes to the Beit HaMoked, and he knocks on the door. all the Kohanim that wanted to participate in the service, which you would think would be all of them, had gotten up before this, went down a winding stairway to the mikvaot underneath the temple, and they immersed themselves. If they had a seminal discharge during the night, then they become impure. They'll go back upstairs, wait till the door is unlocked, and then they will exit out going through the tunnels and exit out one of the gates, the northern gate. The ones that are eligible, he instructs them to come with him, and they go over to the chamber of hewn stone, the chambers of the Sanhedrin. Okay, he has all these Kohanim, and what he's going to do is, wait, I'm messing this up. I need to tell you something first. Each mishmor is going to be divided into the batei avot by families. Okay? And then they're going to make, they're going to have where not all of a mishmor comes to the temple every day. What comes to the temple every day will be the batei avot. In other words, only certain families of that division will come on the first day of the week. And on the next day they don't come, other families come from that division and they'll serve. And then on the third day, other families will come. And if the batei avot is so large that it will take care of all the temple service, then only that one family will come and serve that day. And this, I began to realize this is one of the reasons that they were able to work so well together. I mean, they were not only knew each other for years and years, they were related to each other. They were brothers, they were cousins, they were uncles. And if you did something wrong, you had to go back and live with these people. Okay? I mean, they would all the way down, that young one among them, they're going to be saying, now don't you embarrass me. Okay? And you know, are you sure that you know what you're doing? Okay, well, when they go, the batei avot that's there that day, that when they go, they're going to go to the chamber of hewn stone, and they're going to have to pick who does what. So what they do is they're going to have, we got maybe 10 people or something like that. They pick a number. The superintendent picks a number of like, 29. Okay? Now, in the Torah, it says you can't count people. So they don't count people. They're going to count fingers. Everybody holds a finger up. Okay? And so they come down, and you put your finger up, Isaiah. Okay? They come down, and they start counting fingers. 1, 2, 3. And as they come on down, and then they keep on going until they've gone through all the people, and they start over until they get to number 29. And then number 29 is going to have the first job. And there's this order. The order's in Tamid of who gets the first job, and then they'll pick another number, and then they'll do it all over again. And that's how each job is selected for the day. Okay. Joe, yes?
The batei avot, that's a set thing. From year to year, it's not done by lot. Each time the family would go up to serve.
That's right. The whole course, the whole mishmor will come to Jerusalem. But there'll be many more of them than what is required for the service. So they serve in a rotation of families within the mishmor. And it gives more of them an opportunity to serve in these jobs.
Okay, I guess what I'm thinking is that, well, okay, if you know that on a certain day you're going to serve, you don't have to go up for the entire week. You show up for that particular day. Is that not right?
No, I think they come for the whole week. But their time of service would be a certain day. Understand, they're going to have to be into the Beit HaMokeb before dark, because they have to sleep in the temple. They have to sleep in the temple. They can't just arrive at the temple and start to participate in the ceremonies. They have to have been locked up, be there whenever the superintendent comes to unlock the doors and everything. So they have to be there at least the night before.
To be called upon in case the other priests became disqualified?
Certainly.
So it seems like I remember reading somewhere that they had rules about drinking, that the priests weren't to drink while in the city of Jerusalem in case the other priests were disqualified, they had to come and serve in the temple.
There's going to be all kinds of rules concerning the priest. And in fact, there are rules that they have to adhere to in their journey to Jerusalem. Which, again, that throws light on the story of the Good Samaritan. A priest and Levite went by and didn't aid the guy, but it would have rendered them unable to minister in the temple, which was their job. It's an interesting story when expanded to that. Okay, as I mentioned, if there were fewer than seven, of course, would be the perfect thing, because that would give you one for each day. If there were fewer than seven, some would officiate twice during the week. However, on the other hand, if you have more than seven, then on some days you would have two of the Bateya Avot serving together. Now, let me give you where you can find the information on this, because to me this is a very interesting thing. It's in the Tosefta, in Tanit 2:2. Tanit spelled T-A-A-N-I-T.
This is speaking of the families, not necessarily not the individual jobs, right?
Right, speaking of the families. And then once you get in, then the individual jobs will come up. Uh-huh. The Beit Av. The Beit Av is going to be the father of the house. He's the eldest member that's still eligible for service. Of course, you have a retirement age. Let me read this to you. Furthermore, it's only a small part of a Beit Av was required to serve at any given time. Lots were drawn to decide which individual priest should officiate each day. And the place that is discussed is in Yoma chapter 2, verses 2 through 4. A number of let's see, wait just a second. Okay, I want to give you a little bit of information here that is very general but very important. I have two paragraphs I'm going to read to you. I think that is the fastest way to cover it. We have 12 minutes left. As the priests were numerous and scattered throughout Israel, it was impossible for all of them to officiate at the same time. An arrangement was therefore made whereby they were divided in the final stage regionally into 24 Mishmarot, Lelik guards, which served in a regular weekly rotation. We've already discussed this. The Mishmarot were further broken up into varying number of Bateya Avot, or houses or families. Each division and subdivision was presided over by a head called, and you might want to write this down, Rosh Mishmar. R-O-S-H, literally head. Head of the Mishmar, head of the division, and Rosh Beit Av. And there's also mention made of a Beit Av. The Levites were similarly divided into 24 Mishmarot, which replaced every other week. And a reference on that, 1 Chronicles chapter 25, verse 8 and following. These were in turn subdivided into seven betei avot and presided over by heads. Finally, there was an analogous division of the Israelites themselves into 24 mishmarot, each of which had to take its turn in coming up to Jerusalem for a week. Now, here they call them mishmarot, but other sources say that they were not referred to as the mishmarot. Each of which had to take its turn in coming to Jerusalem for a week. They served to represent the whole body of the people, while the daily communal offerings were sacrificed. For how can a man's offering be offered while he does not stand by it? That part of the Mishmar priest, Levites or Israelites, actually engaged in the performance of his duty, was called a ma'amad or a mood. A mood means station. I already gave you the term, the amudim. And was headed by a Rosh Ma'amad. When the time for the service of a Mishmar came around, all the priests and Levites belonging to it would go to Jerusalem. Not all the Israelites of that Mishmar, however, proceeded to Jerusalem. A portion of them certainly did. Okay, now what's coming is going to be important. But those who could not do so assembled in their own towns and read the story of creation, etc. Only those in Jerusalem who actually stood by while the sacrifice was being offered could, strictly speaking, be called a ma'amad or mood. And now, what I want to cover is some of the restrictions. Yes, Dale?
Why did they read the story of creation?
Because the story of creation was read daily in the temple. In the start of the day. So in other words, when these things were being done in the temple, and likewise when the Shemoneh Esrei and the service was being performed in the temple, the same prayers would be being recited in all 24 districts by the people that did not go up. I mean, they would literally assemble and stand at that time and recite the same prayers, even though they weren't in Jerusalem. Okay, now, we have a number of restrictions that were placed upon the members of the Mishmar and the Beit Av during the week or day of office. The members of the Mishmar were permitted to drink wine by night, but not by day. This is what you were referring to, Mitch. Whereas those of the Beit Av could not drink wine either by day or night, as they might be called upon to assist in the temple service at any conceivable hour. Members of the Mishmar and of the Israelite Ma'amad alike were forbidden to cut their hair or wash their clothes throughout the week. Hope you have more than one garment. As this should have been done earlier, except on Thursday, so that due honor be accorded the Sabbath. So you were allowed to wash your clothes, cut your hair on Thursday, so that you would adorn yourself for the Sabbath. If you want to look that one up, it's in Tanit 2:7. On communal fast days, members of the Mishmar and the Beit Av were permitted to eat, or else to fast only partially, so as to have enough strength to carry out the temple duties. Isn't that interesting? I find that fascinating. Again, that's Tanit 2:6. Tanit deals with the rules of fasting. The men of the Israelite Ma'amad, however, would fast from Monday to Thursday on their week of service, while from Sunday to Friday they read in sections the chapter of creation, Genesis 1. And if you want to read about that, go to Tanit 4, verses 2 through 3. Members of the Mishmar, who were not engaged in actual service, would pray that the sacrifices of their officiating brethren be acceptable, while those of the Israelite Ma'amad, who could not come to Jerusalem, gathered in their local synagogues or meeting places and prayed for the welfare of sailors, wayfarers, children, pregnant women, etc. the Ma'amadot were considered to be of such importance that it was said that without them, heaven and earth could not have survived. I have this... Yeah, go ahead, Dale.
Just trying to put this together, it seems like this all relates to the reestablishment of creation on a daily basis, such
yes.
as what is done in the synagogues today.
Yes. You know, and this might be a very good time for you to bring in about the feminine words here.
Okay. In biblical Hebrew, feminine nouns are considered a rarity, first of all. There's not as many feminine nouns as masculine nouns. And they're associated with people or places or things that contain life and are able to transmit life to others.
And so, again, this would also relate directly to their reading and reciting the story of creation. Now, the importance of the Ma'amad cannot be emphasized enough, because this is where the synagogue system began. This was the actual birth of the synagogue system, where the people gathered together to pray. Now, there's this movie. Now, I don't do anything with Christmas. Okay, Christmas is, at this point, this year, we had the joy of being at a conference, and I was teaching on Hanukkah and everything, and Christmas was just so totally out of the picture that we didn't even realize that it was going on to speak up. That was kind of neat. But I always get a kick out of classic movies. And one of the guys I'm a fan of is Jimmy Stewart. And one of the greatest movies that he was ever in is called It's a Wonderful Life. And in the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, they have where it starts off with you see these stars in heaven. And you have whether it is what you assume to be the voice of God or one of the chief officers of the court of God, and he's talking to another one, and then they say, well, we've got this problem with this fellow George Bailey. And he says, yes, there's been all these prayers coming up here concerning George Bailey. And so they're going to send this angel to take care of him. But the idea of all these people praying at the same time and them ascending to heaven, that is what I get of a daily thing from stemming with the temple as the center and as a great hub spreading out. And that at certain hours, the volume of prayers that you're going to have coming up daily before God, it's an awesome thing when you stop to think of the occurrence of that. I mean, and this still occurs to this day, but when the people were together, like what we see, say, during the time of King Hezekiah, and the whole nation participated in this. And can you imagine the impact, the beauty, the glory of all of this coming together? Now, one last thing. We're down to the last minute and a half. And I dropped my microphone, of all things. Okay, the call in the temple by the crier in the morning, Isaiah, can you help me real fast? Was for the Kohanim to go to their positions for the priestly blessing, which would be on the porch here of the temple. And for the Leva'im to take their positions on the Dukhan for the singing of the Psalms, and for the Ma'amad to assemble here for the reciting of their prayers. Everyone was called to their position. And it brings us back in conclusion so that we each have a role to play. And that all of this works together in a beautiful system that was authored by God. Let's stop here.